You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. I've been talking about the fact that in my Marine Corps life, active duty, reserve, and now doing post-traumatic wounding, I've never heard a senior officer say, "You've got to talk about your stuff." I've never heard it. And I started thinking about that. And I wanted to, so then I started to think about guys like Sledge, right? Sledge is a mortarman, weapons company, weapons platoon, Kilo Company 3-5, right? And so he becomes famous after the war when he writes a book. So in the course of me looking and rooting around and thinking about this subject, I thought, that's how you talk about it, right? That's how you talk about it. And so when I was talking to a friend about this, and he said, "Yeah, but Mac, you know that Sledge, he struggled after the war, right?" I said, "You know what? I don't know that much about his life personally, right?" And so, post-war, okay, I'm going to read you a little bit about his life. He died in 2001 after a long battle with stomach cancer. He left his wife, Jean, and two sons, John and Henry. Anyway, after the war ended, Sledge attended Auburn University, known at the time as Alabama Polytechnic Institute, where he joined a fraternity, got a Bachelor of Arts, got a Bachelor of Science degree, and a Business Administration degree. He had a hard time readjusting to civilian life. Quote, "As I strolled the streets of Mobile, Alabama, civilian life seemed so strange. People rushed around in a hurry about seemingly insignificant things. Few seemed to realize how blessed they were to be free and untouched by the horrors of war. To them, a veteran was a veteran. All were the same, whether one man had survived the deadliest combat or another had pounded a typewriter while in uniform. Once an avid hunter, Sledge gave up his hobby. He found that he could not endure the thought of wounding a bird and said that killing a deer felt like shooting a cow in a pasture. His father found him weeping after a dove hunt where Sledge had to kill a wounded dove. And in the ensuing conversations, he told his father that he could no longer tolerate seeing any suffering. A key turning point in his life and career followed when his father advised him that he could substitute bird watching as a hobby. Sledge started to assist the conservation department in its banding study efforts. The origin of his well-known passion for the science of ornithology. Ornithology, a branch of zoology that concerns itself with the study of birds. When he enrolled in Auburn University, the clerk at the registrar's office asked him if in the Marine Corps he thought he learned anything useful, and this is a scene in the movie where he tells the woman, the poor woman, right, that he was taught how to kill Japs and to try to survive. He found salvation in science as it kept the flashbacks of Peleliu and Okinawa at bay. Close constant study of nature prevented him from going mad. However, the war stayed with him. And finally, at the urging of his wife, he began to put his thoughts on paper, at last allowing him to put his horrors behind him, right? Which is a joke, right? Because they're never behind him. But it allowed him to cope with them. It allowed him to coexist. He returned to Auburn in 1953, where he worked as a research assistant until 1955, the same year he graduated from Alabama Polytechnical Institute with a Master's of Science degree. From 1956 to 1960, Sledge attended the University of Florida and worked as a research assistant. He published numerous papers on helminthology. Yeah, H-E-L-M-I-N-thology, which is the study of parasitic worms. And in 1950, joined the Helminthological Society of Washington. He received his doctorate in biology from the University of Florida in 1960. He was employed by the Division of Plant Industry from the Florida State Department of Agriculture from 1959 to 62. In the summer of 62, Sledge was appointed an assistant professor of biology at Alabama College, not now the University of Montevallo. In 1970, he became a professor, a position he held until he retired in 1990. He taught zoology, ornithology, comparative vertebrate anatomy, and other courses in his long tenure there. He was popular with students and organized field trips and collections around town. In 1989, he received an honorary degree and the rank of colonel from the Marion Military Institute. So that's Sledge's life. A second memoir, China Marine, an Infantryman's Life After World War II, was published posthumously, and its initial hardbound edition was forwarded by Stephen Ambrose and did not have the subtitle listed. It was republished in 2003 with the subtitle by Oxford University Press. China Marine discussed his post-war service in Beijing, his return to Mobile, and his recovering from psychological trauma of war, which means we have to read it. I have to read it. Anyway, so I wanted to play something about his struggle post-war. And so that's what I wanted to play for you. But I don't know that I have anything that I would offer to you right now. I have him, I mean, there's video of him talking about, this is Sledge talking about his combat experiences.
A man's ability to survive in combat depends on his comrades and his immediate leadership. Our discipline, esprit de corps, and tough training were other ingredients that taught me to survive.
Now, this is kind of interesting. This is Sledge, you know, probably in his 70s. And he's got a flannel shirt on. The sleeves are cuffed. He's got a button-down collar. And, you know, it's a linen flannel shirt, right? I'm not sure. So it's a tartan shirt made out of linen. And he's got kind of a roadster hat on. And he's on a Marine Corps rifle range. They're at the 200-yard line shooting in the kneeling position in the background.
Boot camp taught me I was expected to excel even under stress. Would I ever see my family again? Would I do my duty or be a coward? Could I kill? I never experienced any more agonizing suspense than the excruciating torture of those moments before we received the signal to begin the assault. I broke out in a cold sweat as the tension mounted with intensity of the bombardment. My stomach was tied in knots. I had a lump in my throat, swallowed with great difficulty. I felt nauseated and feared that my bladder would empty itself and reveal me to be the coward I was. For those of us who entered the meat grinder itself, it was another world of fear and horror, where the fighting dragged on, and escape seemed less and less likely. Every muscle in my body was as tight as a piano wire. I learned a new sensation of utter, absolute helplessness. At times, it was though as I was alone out there on the battlefield, utterly forlorn in a tempest of violence. Often it seemed impossible that we could...
Now, this is him walking down a beach.
...never reach our objective. Yet the thought never occurred to us that our attack might fail. For us, combat was a series of changing events characterized by confusion, awesome violence, gripping fear, physical stress and fatigue, fierce hatred of the enemy, and overwhelming grief over the loss of friends. And we had something else going for us, patriotism, a deep love of this country and all it stands for.
So that's Sledge. Now, the next one is says, The Old Breed, The Cost of War, lecture by Eugene B. Sledge. See, this is what I want.
The title of my talk is such because The Old Breed was the name given to the 1st Marine Division in World War II. I went to college, graduated from high school in 1942.
So this is what I want to, these are the kind of things I want to hear him talk about the cost of war. But this is like 36 minutes. And Ken Rogers is going to come on here in, as soon as I call him. I wonder if he can do this. We'll see if this works. Because this is voice over IP, it might be better than regular cell phone.
Hello?
Rogers McNamara.
What's up?
Nothing. This is better audio quality than our normal cell phone, so thank you for picking up the phone.
Yes, sir.
Now, you don't know this, but you're actually going to play the role of Eugene B. Sledge, okay? So congratulations.
So he was the guy that wrote the book, The Old Breed, right?
Correct. Mortarman, Kilo Company, in Weapons Platoon, Kilo Company 3-5, Peleliu, and Okinawa. In the series Pacific done on HBO, right?
Right, I saw that and I read his book too, so.
Okay, so you're familiar. You don't need to play him, you can play yourself. Okay, so I'm thinking about the fact last week that I've never been told by somebody senior to me that look at me and say, hey Mac, you've got to talk about your shit, okay? You got to talk about it. When I close my eyes, I hear, well, Grandpa was in World War II and he came home. He never talked about it. Uncle Larry, he was in Vietnam. He came home. He never talked about it. So what I conclude is that, okay, well, they're both men. They don't talk about it. So when you go to war and come home, you don't talk about it. That's how men deal with it. Okay? So why do you think that is? Why do you think we think, or am I wrong about that? Because that's how, to me, that's how I should handle it, is I'm not supposed to talk about it, right? And then, my point is, and the reason why you're on, as opposed to somebody else I could yank on, is that you took the same tack that Sledge and that William Manchester took. They both came back into that culture. They weren't supposed to talk about it either. This thing that had so changed them, this thing that had so moved them, that was supposed to get stuck in the closet someplace. But being smart guys, they decided that they would write about it. And in writing about it, that's how they tricked everybody. Like, oh, I can't talk about it, but maybe I could write about it. And you did the same thing. So I want to talk to you about that. Talk to me about not being able to talk about it, and somehow or other using the arts to convey that. Was that the only avenue available?
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I mean, I certainly understand why you didn't talk about it, or you don't talk about it because you didn't, and nobody wanted to hear it. In my experience, you know, you could. When I came home and tried to talk about what happened to me in Vietnam when I came home, and nobody got it, unless you had been in combat. So it was like, okay, I'm not making a connection here, so I'm just not going to talk about it. So that was part of my issue, personal issue. The other thing is, you know, you're supposed to be tough and mean and stoic and endure, and this is what we do, and, you know, it's our job, and no complaining and no bitching and no whining, shut up and man up. And so that's what we did. And we did that for a long time. As far as investigating, you know, I think I was different maybe than some other people because every day I thought about Vietnam. Every day. I'd wake up in the morning and quite often for many, many years, the first thoughts that popped in my mind, other than maybe having a hell of a hangover, was something that happened to me in Vietnam. And so, I mean, I was thinking about it. I wasn't talking about it, but I was thinking about it. And I think I stumbled on to investigating it in more detail through the use of writing is because I wanted to write short stories about stuff that had nothing to do with war, but the only thing that came out of me basically was war stuff. I would sit down to write something. You know, I was going to classes. I was taking classes. I was going to college to learn how to be a writer. And it drove me crazy because I could not write about anything else. I mean, even when I wrote a story that wasn't about the war, somehow it bubbled up, it percolated up, it showed up. So I think that what I was doing was I was taking out my experiences, working them over, fingering them, touching them, hearing them, smelling them again, tasting all that shit, trying to figure out what the hell happened. That's what I think.
Right. Well, and so to me, I think it would be helpful if guys like me stand up and look at young veterans and say, you have to talk about it, okay? We kind of, you know, and you need to find somebody to talk about it. And that might not be the easiest thing in the world for you. But now I want to ask you now about, you've now shared this with your wife, right?
Right.
So I say, and then and I didn't even anticipate asking you this. When I talk about, when I tell people, you got to talk about it, I say, and you know the first person you should talk about it with? Your wife. She is the shock absorber, right? She is the bumper for all of this. And then you say, yeah, but I can't talk to you, so you stand over there while I punish you on a regular basis with this shit. And I say, right? If I was her, I'd say, well, look, man, we're going to go there, okay? You and me, we're going there because I ain't playing this game anymore. So, boyfriend, look at me. We're going there. And when I can't take it more, I'll put my hand up, okay? But you and me are going to go there. The only thing I would tell you that happens when you do that is there's greater intimacy because you've allowed her in, the person that loves you. And that's a good thing. But we are every fiber, and most of us, because of the way we come to this socially, says, do not do that. Yet you've done it.
Well, I did it early, you know, right after I married my wife. My first wife didn't want to hear about it. She didn't want to talk about it. Okay, so my second wife, the one I have now, I talked to her early on about it. She was the first person that I ever talked to that I felt who wasn't a veteran of combat, was the first person I ever talked to that got the emotional impact of what had happened to me. So I think it was really good that we talked about it because then she was somewhat prepared for all my shenanigans. You know, you should talk to your wife about it, but I know of, and I'm not going to mention any names here. I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I know of guys that I served with whose wives did not want to hear about it. So, yeah, you should talk to your wife, and if she didn't want to hear about it, she'll tell you, but you need to tell them what happened to you because all this crap's going to boil up in your life anyway.
Right.
So they need to be forewarned.
Well, and it surprises me that they wouldn't want to go there with you. And the other thing is it helps to talk to somebody who's been there. Yeah. But I don't think that's even a requirement. You need to talk to somebody who cares about you, who loves you, and who you trust. But I think it's always easier, certainly with people that have been there and done that. It's a comfortable place. But I think the requirement is you have to be able to talk about it because it helps you process it. And if it's somebody, and if it's somebody else who loves you and cares about you, then they're willing to it, and it doesn't bother them. Then to me, do that. But we ought to absolutely encourage that behavior of disclosure in order to process the experience, because nothing good comes from coming home trying to stick a cork in it and putting it on the shelf. Because trust me, it doesn't stay in the bottle, and it sure as fuck ain't staying on the shelf.
Well, no, and when it doesn't, you know, and then it becomes in control when it comes out. Right. So, I mean, so, you know, you walk into some kind of situation that surprises the hell out of you or pisses you off, and you blow your top or you pull some stunt, and you know, that person there that thinks they know you shocks the hell out of them. Who is this person I'm dealing with? So, you're right. I'm going to agree with you on that.
I just wanted you, because you took the same kind of an artistic path in terms of dealing with your stuff. Initially, I didn't know that you went to school to be a writer. You know, I just picked up the story, you know, as you and Betty begin to video people. So you were already inclined towards that direction. I just think, look, there's a more fundamental way that we can deal with our stuff, and everybody needs to, and that is you've got to talk about it. And yet I've never heard, to this day, I've never heard anybody senior to me look at me or a group and say, you've got to talk about this.
Oh, I haven't either, you know, other than...
Isn't that odd, though? I mean, look, it's not...
It's culture.
It's what?
It's the culture.
Well, we need to change the culture, then.
Right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
You know, it's only 5,000 years old.
It's all right. Today's the first day of a new dawn. Let me read you... Eugene Sledge wrote a second book, right? and it's called China Marine. A second memoir, China Marine, an infantryman's life after World War II, was published posthumously. Its initial hardbound edition was forwarded by Stephen Ambrose, was published again by Oxford University Press with the subtitle. China Marine discusses his post-war service in Beijing, his return home to Mobile, and his recovery from the psychological trauma of warfare. Right? I love the way they phrase that. And his recovery from the psychological, like he ever recovered from that. Okay? Right. But again, that's our culture, all 5,000 fucking years of it, saying stupid shit like that. Right?
That's right.
And it doesn't say, and the beginning of his beginning to coexist with the psychological trauma that would accompany him till his death. Right? Which is a much more enlightened way of saying it. And let me just tell you, Rogers, that's where our culture is going, because I'm taking us there.
Okay.
All right. You with me?
I'm with you. And listen, the last few years, you know, I go out here to these. They have an organization here that's affiliated, kind of semi-affiliated with Boise State, that helps veterans that have had trauma, wounds, stuff like that, get into college. And I have gone and worked with them on trying to tell their stories. So I've been doing it a little bit when asked. Going to do some more of it this summer in a couple of places. So, you know, let's get with it.
All right. Well, let me tell you, invite me whenever you can, because I'd love to come and do that with you. Because to me, the incredible lessons of your experience and that come, in my opinion, that come out, if I remember when I'm doing my post-traumatic winning pitch, and I just did it here with the commanders of the 1st Marine Division, the regimental commanders, the separate battalion commanders, and the CG, and his primary staff. You know, I talked about Bravo, because I use you, some audio from one of our interviews where you...
I heard that. Yes. I heard about that.
That said, you're an asshole, man. If you drink with PTSD, you're an asshole, right? You're just an asshole. I know. I was. I didn't. In fact, I should play that audio right now because I have it. And then you say, and I didn't care either. And then I say that guy made, because you have the picture I use is you in a red hat with that says Bravo on it. I said, and then I'll mention Bravo. And I'll say, and if you want to see some amazing stuff, he and his wife Betty filmed this stuff 50 years approximately after Quezon. And you're going to hear these guys talk about it. And one guy in particular, Frank McCauley, will describe it as vividly as the day it happens. And when you're watching him do it, you'll sit there and say, he's there. He's not in that room in front of, right? And
right.
So when we say it ain't going away, it ain't going 50 years later. So I use that. And, so I would love to, I'd love to do something with you someday along these lines, because to me, it's the most basic of facts. If it ain't going away, you got to learn how to talk about it so you can learn to live with it. And so the key part is don't push your wife away. You can take her there. Trust me, if she can have your kids and she can be a mom, she can listen to you talk about what you went through and somebody else's, you know, body getting splattered over you and what that was like. And, you know, she can listen. She can hear that. Trust me. And the only thing it's going to do is bring you closer, unless she says, I don't want to hear it. And if that's the case, then find somebody else. But it is essential to your being able to coexist with it. Because if you don't, then what you do is you find other ways to do it. And I think that's what Manchester did. I think that's what Sledge did. You were on that road in terms of how do I articulate this? How do I do something with this? How do I process it so I can live with it?
Right. That's exactly right.
All right. So what have you been up to? Now I see pictures you post all the time. Do you like constantly drive around Idaho and take pictures? Where does that shit come from?
No, I do. You know, when we go somewhere, I take pictures, and then I'll take a bunch of them. So we drive around a lot. I mean, we went to, we took our new film, basically, all the raw stuff, and we took it to our editor, and then we drove around the West and took pictures, and then we came home and we're resting, and next week we're getting ready to go again to Arizona to screen Bravo for the Arizona Marine Corps League annual whatever they have. And so I'll take some pictures.
I got invited to that, but I haven't heard anything from them.
Well, I think they're stressed out. So.
Why? Why do you think they're stressed out? Did I stress them out?
It's just, you know, it's just like trying to make all kinds of stuff happen. So.
Oh, really? Because when I saw them here a couple weeks ago, when I used your video, they came up to me and they said, hey, he's coming to our thing in March. Would you come? And then I haven't heard from him. Maybe they said, yeah, let's not invite him.
Well, they were very impressed with your
you know these guys
presentation. So,
well, it's impressive. I mean, what the hell? You're in it.
Well, I think that it's, you know, probably impressive because all of these guys are sitting around and secretly wishing they could tell somebody, and somebody tells them it's okay.
So, well, let me tell you, who's the head guy?
What his name is Ross Scanio.
Warren?
Who?
The president of the Marine Corps League. Who's?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I do.
I don't. I haven't been in the Marine Corps League for years. It's like,
what a bastard.
One organization too many for me. So
the well, he was sitting in. I'm sitting there doing it. Let's see. Bob Borker was in it. He's the chief operating officer. Warren Griffin. That's his name. Oh, it might be Wendell Webb. It's either one of these two guys. Wendell Webb's the 62nd National Commandant. I think it's Wendell Webb. Anyway, he's sitting in the back of when I'm doing this thing, and he's sitting there listening. And at the end of it, you know, he raises his hand to speak because we were doing kind of do a question and answer. He said, you know, he said, this is outstanding. He said, I wish, you know, I'd seen this years ago. He said, and it's important that we tell the truth to people. And he told a story about, and he got emotional telling it. His father owned a tow truck service. And he said, you know, my dad took me one night and there was a car accident. And he said, come on, I'm going to need your help. And he said, we got there and, a sedan had impacted the undercarriage of a semi, and there was four young people in it, and they were all decapitated.
Mm-hmm.
And he said after the police had done their thing, then, you know, he had to pull it out from underneath, and he said it was gruesome. And he said, and my dad looked at me and he said, son, he said, this is real life. This is real life, and you can't run from it, and I need your help. And he got emotional talking about it. I mean, that's how deep these things are in people when you talk about these issues. But it was awesome, you know, and he talked about how important it was for us, you know, to tell the truth and then to be able to talk about it, which is the second part of all of this that we don't do very well. Which is the talking about it thing. But I don't think it's too late. 5,000 years of culture be damned, because I think it is, it's the natural place that I know we have to go. And people want to go there. You want to go there. You want to talk about it. Right?
Well, I'm compelled.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's more than I want to. It's just like, you know, and I hear so much BS from all corners of the universe about combat and war and what it means, and it's like, hey, you know, spoken by somebody that doesn't know what the hell they're talking about.
Right.
Let's get the truth out there, you know. I mean, it's like, there ain't no glory in it. The glory comes later. the glory when somebody reflects on it or somebody else talks about it. But when it's happening, it's ugly shit, man. It's ugly and it's mean and it's vicious and it's traumatic and it's, it can be physically traumatic and it's certainly mentally traumatic. And it's like somebody needs to tell people, hey, this is how it is. Right or wrong, I don't make that kind of conclusion because this is what we do. We fight wars. But let's not be stupid about how we represent it. So,
well, and the other thing
that's my big deal.
Right. The other part is, and when you come home, that war is coming with you.
Oh, sure.
Right. And so you need to get mentally prepared to coexist with it and to deal with it because it ain't going away, as you said.
Well, yes.
Think about it.
And I think
the military
needs to, be upfront about this when people, before they go to combat, this is what it's going to look like, and then you do some proactive business here about telling these people and these women, these men, that when you get home, this shit ain't going away. You need to be forewarned. I mean, people need to know this ahead of time.
But we don't do that. It's amazing.
Oh, I know.
It's amazing to me. I was talking to Tom Drowdy, who was talking about, he was in Vietnam in 1965. So he's one of, in terms of battalions going, they were one of the first larger formations
right.
to go. I know there was advisors and other units there, but, and I had this similar conversation with a guy who was in, was he part of 1st Tank Battalion? Going to the, well, they thought they were going to the Pusan perimeter, but they wound up being part of the Incheon landing. And asked them both the same question. Did the veterans talk to you about what was going to happen? No, they didn't. They didn't say a word. I said nothing. They said, nope, nothing. They got ready like everybody else. And I found that a bit stunning. That you wouldn't take your guys if you were a gunny or a staff sergeant or whatever, and say, all right, hey, let me tell you what's going to happen here, boys. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but if we get into it with somebody, everybody's going to be scared shitless. Some of us are going to piss our pants. I know because I've done it. But don't worry about any of that, right? Just pay attention, right? Do what you've been trained to do, and we'll be okay. It's just steadying words like that. Nobody said a word. I just found that odd.
Well, I never heard anything like that.
Yeah, and you went and so
I never heard anything like
you.
That.
But you go to Vietnam as an individual, right?
Right.
So you fly over, they put you in the receiving company, and then you're ultimately shot out to Bravo.
Right.
Bravo.
Right.
Company.
Then you go out in the bush with the troops. So,
right.
But nowhere did I, we talked about a lot of stuff, but there was never that intimate relation from somebody who had had the experience to tell you what it was going to be like and what to expect. So I never, and if that happened, I don't remember it. I would think I would because it would have scared the shit out of me.
You probably would have. Well, the other thing I think you would have remembered always is that kind of intimate gesture about, hey, that steadying hand on your shoulder saying, hey, you're going to be okay, we'll get through this, and this is how you do it, or at least an attempt to do that. I don't think anybody would ever forget that.
Right.
Anyway, all right. So tell everybody about your next effort, and when are we going to finally see it, for God's sake?
Well, my wife and I are making a movie about Wives of Combat Veterans, and we've interviewed two ladies whose husbands were in World War II, a lady whose husband was in the Korean War, four Vietnam veterans' wives, and the rest from your wars, the later ones, and got some dramatic, powerful interviews that now are in the hands of our editor, and so hopefully we'll have some kind of movie this year. So.
This year, this calendar year.
Yeah.
It'll be exciting. I'm expecting an invitation to the premiere, just so you know.
Okay.
I'm not afraid to drive up to Boise.
You shouldn't be. It's not that far. Well, it is. You can make it up here in a day and a half. So. Well, a young guy like you might make it all in one day.
Yeah,
so.
No, I've driven it one day. It's a long day. It's a long drive, but...
Yeah, it's a long drive.
Pretty easy. Pretty easy. Nevada, not a whole lot there.
So, I always use 395, so...
That's where I go. 395 on the backside, on the eastern side of the Sierra Nevadas. And then, you hop on 80 for a bit, and then you head north into Idaho.
That's right.
There you have it. That's how you get there. So, yeah, I expect an invitation. So, anyway. All right.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate you hopping on. It was kind of an epiphany, this whole we don't talk about it thing that we do. But I think about it every day. And, you know, and I use alcohol, you know, to help cope with it. Right. But what I really need to do is I really need to talk about it. I need a friend, right?
Start talking about it.
Right.
And
so, but these guys, right, they, you know, these famous Marines who wrote, Manchester and Sledge, I mean, they wrote, and that was their outlet because we didn't have a diagnosis that said PTSD. We didn't do group therapy. We didn't do any of that shit. And, you know, you're supposed to just get on with your life. So.
Right.
All right, sir. Well, I appreciate you hopping on with me today.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Have a good one, Ken. Thank you.
All right, sir.
All right.
Bye.
There you have it. The one and only Ken Rogers. Substituting for Eugene V. Sledge. The book is entitled "An China Marine, An Infantryman's Life After World War II. Let me see if... It was republished as a paperback. That'll do it here. I'm curious to see what he has to say about this. Give me 1 second to copy and paste the link, and I'll find out where it takes me to see if the book is in print and, well, where you can get it. Let's see, Amazon.com. How about that? Is there an electronic version? Probably not. What do you think? If there was, I could download it today and read it today. Digital list price, Be Still My Heart. There's an electronic version of it. Yes. $16. Audiobook, $16.16. Hardcover. $6.24? Holy smokes. Paperback, $17.14. Audio CD, $25. So, yeah, that's it. So, All right, I'm fired up now. I'm fired up. Anyway, that'll do it. General Zinni just sent me an email. He's not coming on tomorrow. He's had something come up that's unavoidable. And so he said, can I take a rain check and I'll be happy to come on a different time. And I said, what's the appropriate answer? Absolutely. Absolutely you can. But I'm disappointed. I was fired up about that. I know. Sad. And then somebody within minutes of that, right? So I was emailing during the program. In fact, the email comes when I was on with Grant Nuschen. And at one point in the interview, Grant says, hello, because I didn't say anything. I was reading General Zinni saying, I'll be unavailable tomorrow. So anyway, and then somebody a few minutes later sends me another email, and it's got a letter entitled Staff Non-Commissioned Officer, and it's from A.C. Zinni, Colonel, United States Marine Corps. Written on 25 April, 1989. Subject, the Staff Non-Commissioned Officer. So, anyway. Alright, if you're just tuning in right now, congratulations. That's a quality choice you made this today. And let me tell you what you're going to hear. What you're going to hear is a little bit of discussion about the president not being able to come to an agreement with North Korea. And you're going to hear my comments about it, which I think that's a good thing. All right? And you're going to hear Grant Newsham's comments about it. And I'll tease it. He thinks it's a good thing, too. So any time America, the United States of America, stands up on his hind legs, it tends to be a good thing for the world. Yeah. So, anywho, so you'll hear that. And you heard Grant talking about that. I also asked him about his thoughts on the Marine Corps pivoting to the Pacific, the concept of being forward deployed to the Pacific, and a new mission / role, or the evolution of our mission role. I think that's probably a better term. The evolution of our mission and role as maritime forces. So, anywho, we'll get Grant's thoughts on that as well. And then I was talking about, and I will endeavor to do this for tomorrow, but I'll listen to audio of Sledge, and I want to hear him talking about his life after the war. Because what my friend said to me was, you know, he self-medicated with alcohol for years. That's how he handled it. So again, it's this whole, we don't talk about it. Sledge of Manchester wrote about it. Ken Rogers, he made a documentary about it. How about this? How about we as an institution stand up and say, you got to talk about it? Right. How about somebody other than All Marine Radio stand up and say, got to stop drinking if you're dealing with trauma or you're going to destroy your life? Unless you do want to live with your dog for the rest of your life. So, have a great Thursday. Colleen's got a swim meet. She's got to take a test. After school, then she's going to swim. So I'm headed to that. After I do some work, and then go work out. Have a great day. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio. Over and out. I kid you not, man. When Joe hears me say, out, he sits up and he comes running right over to me. That's right. He's a great puppy. Jack, he just sleeps. Joe comes right over, man. He's my dog. He's my D-O-G. And he knows. That's right. I can get petted after he says that. Out. Yes, tail starts wagging. That's right. Out. Yeah. Anyway, have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow on another edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.